Thanks for joining us in Chicago tonight. I'm Joan Hernandez. Brandis Freeman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at. Federal food assistance recipients will soon need to meet stricter work requirements.
$500 for them is a big blessing to them right now.
An effort to raise funds for Chicago's struggling street vendors. And Chicago rapper Adam Killa joins us to talk about his viral social media videos. We kick things off right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
More than 300,000 Illinois residents are at risk of losing their SNAP benefits. Major changes are happening to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program come February 1st, when stricter federal work requirements will begin phasing in. The report comes as new Purdue University data indicates that food security insecurity in the United States has increased, climbing from 12.5% of households last year to 14% now. Joining us now to discuss all of that and more are Kimberly Gunther, Chief Impact Officer at the United Way of Metro Chicago, and Kate Mayer, CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. Thank you, ladies, for joining us today. I want to start off kicking it off. Let's start with these new work requirements. For able-bodied adults without dependents ages 18 to 64, you will need to work, volunteer, or participate in job training at least 80 hours per month. Also, exemptions have been repealed for veterans, unhoused individuals, and young adults aging out of foster care. Those who do not meet these requirements may be limited to receiving benefits for only 3 months within a three-year period. Now, Kate, I want to start off. How concerning are these new benchmarks that recipients have to meet? It seems a little bit all confusing and overwhelming almost.
Absolutely. And so let me just start. The bill that was passed on July 4th by Congress and signed by President Trump makes major changes to the SNAP program. SNAP is what we sometimes call food stamps. It's actually an amazing program. More than 60 years we've had it in place in this country. It provides assistance, benefits that people can use at grocery stores to get food. It also is a really powerful tool for stimulating our economy. Mm-hmm. And this bill brought forward really significant changes, including making sure that people have to work. Now, people have always had to work on SNAP. What the bill actually does is it takes away some of the waivers that states had. But at the end of the day, it's super confusing for a lot of our neighbors who don't understand what it is they have to do, when they have to do it, and they are really worried, particularly after we've just had a government shutdown, that for hundreds of thousands of people across the state and millions of people across the country meant that they had no SNAP benefits.
And people who rely on these benefits. Now, these changes are tied to the bill that you talked about, rules outlined in the One Big Beautiful Bill. Now, in a statement, the Illinois Department of Human Services said, Trump's budget bill is designed to deliberately prevent Americans and Illinoisans from receiving assistance through the SNAP program by implementing new requirements that burden states and individuals who rely on this 100% federally funded benefit source. Kate, what do you view as the most important immediate impact of these stricter requirements?
I think the most important thing is right now, if there are people watching who are part of the program, they are receiving SNAP benefits, to go to the Illinois Department of Human Services website and find out. You likely may have to provide some additional information in order to make sure that your SNAP benefits continue. We know that there are going to be many people, including some immigrants who have in the past been able to legally receive SNAP benefits, as well as some people who no longer meet these new requirements that are being put forward, who are going to lose their benefits. And to those folks, what we need to make sure that they are aware of is that there is an amazing network of charitable organizations, food pantries and soup kitchens all across this community who might have the food that they need to be able to feed themselves and their families.
Now, the deadline was originally December, right? Why, do you know why it was changed? Or
I do, and this is part of the confusion. There have been a series of lawsuits, legal actions taken by states in order to test whether or not some of the provisions in the law are in fact legal, and there's been a lot of question about that. Right now, we are trying to navigate this, and we understand the provisions won't begin until February 1. Again, it is really confusing for the families out there who are just trying to make sure that they have groceries for the children in the household. And so go to the Illinois Department of Human Services website. You can get great information there. You can also go to the Food Depository website and learn whether or not you need to take additional steps in order to keep your SNAP benefits.
Have you heard from some of these families?
We have heard from a lot of families. Families are scared. Families are worried about what is in front of them. People are wondering how they are going to make ends meet. And I will just say this is on top of, as you noted at the beginning, historic and unprecedented hunger in this community and in this country. We are serving more people today at the Greater Chicago Food Depository than we ever have served in our close to 50-year history.
I mean, you are already serving, the depository is already serving hundreds of people in general.
We are serving hundreds of thousands of our neighbors, and this is a sobering reality that we are going to see even more people. For every meal we are able to provide, the SNAP program provides 9. So taking that back from people is going to have huge ramifications.
Kimberly, I want to bring you in. What has that been like for Metro Chicago and especially 211? Have you seen an increase in calls?
There has been a tremendous increase. Just looking from the first 2 weeks of October to the first 2 weeks of November, we saw 149% increase in calls for food assistance only. We also know that there were calls for things like employment services that are probably in line with some of these upcoming requirements.
And let's remind people, 211, someone's calling for assistance, you're hooking them up or directing them to different food depositories or pantries? Or
211 is a 24/7 call line where people can call for human services. All they need to provide is their zip code. They can provide additional information if they'd like. But really, it's a one-stop shop to be able to get access to all of the services that you need.
And there's been an overwhelming increase.
There's been an overwhelming increase. That 149% was on top of a month-to-month 43% increase from September to October. So, you know, in addition to the pause in SNAP benefits, we know that federal presence in communities also impacted people's ability to go and get food at pantries or perhaps go to work, thus kind of putting those households in real shaky positions.
Did that prompt Metro Chicago to start the Response Fund grant? Can you tell me a bit about that?
It did, yes. So for some time, we've been looking at just the incredible data that 211 offers. What's incredible about it is that it updates daily. So it's one of the very few sources of real-time data about emerging needs. So we've been able to look at that data, see that increase in calls, meet with Kate and her team and look at, you know, where the highest SNAP utilization is across the region, and also talk to our 145 funded partners across the Chicago region. And from that, we determined that we can make some response grants. So we have funded 24 organizations across the metro area, a $250,000 investment with a real focus on the hyper-local pantries and organizations that are doing home delivery.
Is there different neighborhoods that are being more impacted than others? Is that
absolutely? When we look across the map, particularly here in Chicago, we know that there is a disproportionately high number of people who are food insecure and also who rely on the SNAP program on the west side of Chicago, on the south side of Chicago, and in the far south suburbs. Hunger in this community and hunger in America is a reflection of poverty. And so it's not surprising that we see those maps look the same, whether we are talking about food insecurity, poverty, or health disparities.
I have to ask, Kimberly, what do you think people get wrong about people who are enrolled in SNAP benefits?
I think there's an assumption that people aren't doing everything within their power to provide for their families, to access all of the resources that they need. But if we look at decades of disinvestment in communities, in individuals, it really is so difficult to gain a foothold. And so many of the people that access SNAP benefits are working, have complex family situations that maybe they're caretaking for people. And there is just a terrible narrative that is very untrue about, I think, all of the folks in our region that are accessing services in order to have a stable life for their families.
Okay, following up on that, you know, what do you say to people who see the additional work requirements and think that this seems reasonable?
So again, to be clear, we have always had these work requirements. What has changed is that states were allowed to have waivers because there were high unemployment rates, because it was hard for people to get jobs. The bill took away the ability for states to have those waivers. That's what really changed. We haven't done anything different. Denying people access to food is not going to make them get a job. As Kimberly said, most of the people who can work are working. In fact, most of the people on SNAP are not even the population that people think of. Most of the people on SNAP are children, are older adults, and people with disabilities. And so I think there's a narrative that we really have to change.
You mentioned also like an impact on grocery stores.
That's right.
So how does that work?
I think one of the concerns that I have is the way SNAP works, you get dollars loaded up on an EBT card. You spend those dollars in qualified grocery stores. And those grocery stores, they use those dollars to hire people in the community, to buy food from food companies. Those dollars go all the way back to the Illinois farmer. And so when we begin to restrict access to SNAP, we are leaving those dollars out of our economy, and that has huge ramifications, not just for places like Chicago, but I'm really worried about smaller communities and rural communities. There are grocery stores that will really struggle with this new bill.
I mean, especially grocery stores that are in food deserts, I would like to say. Well, thank you both for your knowledge. Thank you for being here today, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Up next, how some Chicagoans are rallying around the city's street vendors. Chicago street vendors say they're being pushed out of business. Since the start of the Trump administration's Operation Midway Blitz, many vendors have stopped selling altogether, fearing federal immigration enforcement. Tonight, we hear from the vendors and how some Chicago residents are rallying around them.
Entonces, lo que nosotros queremos traerle a la gente es su tradición aquí en las calles.
Throughout the year, you can find vendors on the corners of many neighborhoods selling foods like elotes, tamales, tacos, and raspados.
They mean a lot more than people would have realized. They're the pillar of Chicago. They bring their culture. There are different seasonings. There are different tastes of food.
At any given time, you used to see street vendors lined up all along 26th Street. Over the last 2 months, that reality has changed. Due to federal immigration arrest, fewer and fewer street vendors are out in the streets.
Members of the Street Vendor Association say the situation is becoming desperate. Many can't work right now, and they're struggling to make ends meet.
Imagínate, me hablaban, y tú conoces a este vendedor, se lo acaban de llevar. Y luego miraba los videos y sentías impotencia.
Juan Gama, the association's vice president, says they knew they had to act, so they launched a street vendor relief fund. What happened next took them by surprise.
We all cried every time we reached 10,000 or 20,000. We're like, okay, we didn't think it was going to pass 20,000, 30,000 because they didn't think people knew about them or liked them and stuff, but we jumped into action.
The goal was $300,000. Currently, the GoFundMe stands at over $330,000.
We have about 960 people that have applied, so our goal is to filter out everyone that is vendors, making sure verifying.
With more than 6,000 street vendors across Chicago, the Street Vendor Association aims to reach at least 1,000 of them. So far, they've distributed $500 checks to 150 vendors.
Una señora se me partió el corazón porque Llegaron y le dieron sus $500 y se fue corriendo por la medicina para su esposo. A su esposo le habían cortado la lengua por cáncer.
Gama's roots in street vending run deep. He began selling in Chicago as a teenager.
Yo sé lo que ellos sienten estar en la calle. Las horas de preparación de sus tamales, las horas de preparación de su fruta, de sus elotes. Y sé lo que es un día de 90. Cuando no vendes, tienes que regresarte y tienes que tirar todo porque es comida. ¿Sí me entiendes?
According to the association, a large number of street vendors are seniors over 60 and depend on their daily sales to get by.
Estamos luchando. Ahorita, aunque ya se fue la migra, aunque ya se fue supuestamente, ¿verdad?, parte, de todos los vendedores tienen miedo.
María Orozco, whose family has long worked as vendors, says it's heartbreaking to watch hardworking individuals be treated unfairly just because of their legal status.
This is a business that not everyone could run. Not everyone can wake up at 5, 4 in the morning to do what you guys are doing. They're a very important part of Chicago, not just in that aspect, but also in the economy. They're a big, they pay taxes, they have their licenses.
With immigration enforcement pushing them into the shadows, the association says Chicagoans have stepped up to offer support.
Viste un programa de unos ciclistas que llegaron y están comprando material.
The group Cycling X Solidarity is organizing bike tours across the city to buy out vendor supply.
A toda la gente que nos ha apoyado, yo quiero darles las gracias enormemente porque con eso que tú has dado, 10, 20 dólares, 100, 500, has llevado un plato de comida a un hogar.
The association says if they can raise more money, they hope to give vendors a second round of checks. They're still taking applications, and we have all that information on our website. Up next, Chicago rapper Adam Killa joins us to talk about the message behind his viral social media videos, his upcoming concert, and much more.
Reflecting the people and perspectives that make up our communities, this story is part of Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices.
Rapper Adam Kelly, better known as Adam Killa, has been going viral for his videos on social media. In the post, Kelly trolls local law enforcement by daring them to arrest them and then dancing to his song, Fall On.
Ooh, arrest me, daddy!
The trend did land him in hot waters earlier this month when a Chicago police officer handcuffed and briefly detained Kelly. He was released, though, without charges, and is back at it again, saying the videos are part of his larger message. Joining us now is Adam Kelly, better known as rapper Adam Killa. Thank you for joining us.
Ooh, arrest me,
daddy. Hey, you have to start off like that.
Yeah.
I have to ask, where did this idea spark to start, you know, going in front of a National Guard and saying, ooh, arrest me, daddy?
So actually, I was in New York with my friend Suave, and I saw an officer, he had like his hand on his gun, and I just did it. I was like, ooh, arrest me, daddy, and he recorded it, and I posted it, and it went viral, so I kept doing it.
I mean, did you expect that that was gonna go viral? Like, did you expect that reaction?
I mean, no, not that one. I just post, like, I post like 20 times a day, so whatever does good, I just keep doing it.
20 times a day?
Yeah.
That's a lot, just to see, like, what hits and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I found interesting is some have seen it as a unique form of protest. For you, though, is it having fun, or for you, it has it been also a way of protesting?
It's kind of both, because, like, the guy that I did it to, he kind of did, like, loosen up after, and he was, like, laughing, so it's like, I'm not a threat.
You know, and I've seen officers laugh, right?
Yeah.
Because you've done so many of these videos.
Yeah, most of them do. Or they'll, like, walk away. I only got detained by that one.
Yeah. Do you talk to some of the officers after, or you just walk away, or do they just, like, laugh it off?
I just walk off. But some of them, they talk to me. They told me they got a group chat about me now. Like, and they alert each other where I walk, where I'm at.
So you're popular.
Yeah. Among them.
Among them.
Yeah. They see me, and, like, walk away.
Like, oh, here he comes. Yeah. Here he comes. Now, you also reposted a video where your stepmother was shouting at ICE agents when they were checking IDs for Uber drivers at O'Hare.
Yeah.
You know, why has it been important for you to repost that and talk about that?
Because I don't agree with it. Like, I feel like we should have global citizenship. Honestly, that's my opinion. I don't believe anyone is illegal.
So it's been important for you. What has it been like for you to speak out on that? Have you had any type of, like, good or bad backlash? Or
I mean, mostly good, but you know, it's always going to be bad from some people because everybody has different opinions. But that's why I believe it up.
Yeah.
And then also, doing it at the Uber lot is not smart because, I mean, I'm pretty sure you have to have a social to work for Uber.
Yeah.
So you're really just wasting everybody's time.
So it was important for you to, like, say something.
Yeah.
Were you an Uber driver before?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
And Lyft, and it was terrible.
But it was bad.
Yeah.
But it was a job, right?
It was a job.
Because I know that you've been in the music industry for 15 years already.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about your career.
So I started just doing music for fun because I played baseball in high school. I played baseball in college, too. I had a full baseball scholarship to Illinois Central. So I was just doing music for fun, and then it started doing well, and I dropped out, went on a world tour, just kept doing music.
So baseball was also a love of yours.
Yeah, it was an option, too. I could have did that as a career, too, but
yeah.
I chose music.
What is it about music?
I always did it. I always liked it. I grew up listening to music. I was always into music. So it was either, I thought I was going to do baseball. It was either baseball or music.
Do you feel like this recent, I know you've been doing it for so long, but do you feel like this recent, like, spike in fame and all these views, I know you have over 9 million views in, like, different platforms, has helped your career?
Yeah, I get around, like, 520 million views a month on, like, TikTok and Instagram. So it's definitely pushing my music. But right now, my face is a little bigger than my music. But I have a show December 5th at Reggie's.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. But how does that make you feel, though, that you're getting, like, all these, like, paid feedback, people following you, liking your videos.
Yeah.
I've also seen trends where there's a group of young people doing it with you.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great because on my TikTok alone, I think it says I have like 930 million individual viewers. So that's like, what, 1/8 of the world has seen me on TikTok.
All over the world. Isn't that crazy?
It's pretty crazy.
Like somewhere around the world at night, they're like scrolling, looking at your videos.
It is pretty crazy thing, but I get stopped everywhere, like constantly.
Yeah, and you love your fans, right?
Yeah, I do. They're pretty nice.
What is it about your fan base?
I feel like they're just so nice to me because I always talk to them. They like see me more of like a friend, I guess.
Yeah.
So they act pretty crazy.
And I think that makes you like relatable.
Yeah, I'm pretty relatable. My fans, like, sometimes it'll be like a 6-year-old that comes with their parent, or it'll be like a 50, 60-year-old. So like my fan base is pretty like broad. Yeah.
Do you think like during this political climate, this just kind of brings a different type of joy? Like, have you noticed that?
Yeah, I feel like people are happy. They're happier when they see me.
Yeah.
I like make their day, they say.
Because you're a rapper, but also you're bringing this type of entertainment.
Yeah, it's an entertainment. And like, I feel like people just like whatever I do.
So you do all kinds of videos, but going back to your music, who are some of your biggest influencers?
Like growing up?
Yeah.
Probably Lil Wayne.
Who doesn't like Lil Wayne?
Yeah, I know. I grew up on Lil Wayne, listening to Lil Wayne a lot. I'm trying to think who else. Cameron.
Yeah. What would you say in this 15 years has been some of your biggest like challenges?
Biggest challenges is the money aspect at first, because you kind of, sometimes it like it slows down, so you might have to get a job, like how I had to do Uber. That was the first job I ever had, was Uber and Lyft. And then I was like picking up fans.
Wow.
And then they would be like, what happened? Like, why are you doing Uber? And you would be like, dang.
But that says a lot about your hustle, right?
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself a hustler?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you kind of have to be to do this, especially as an independent artist, because I'm independent.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't have a label. It's all me funding everything and doing stuff.
And figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
And now it feels like, it seems like you found a formula for something that worked for you on social media and you ran with it. You also do these trendy videos shouting out very specific groups.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a look. I feel like every time I hear the song, it's like a bop. You know, like you need to say, like you need to do it, right?
Yeah, I do the dance.
You know, why this approach?
I started going to colleges
because
I just thought about like, oh, what if like when I was younger and say like, I like Lil Wayne, what if he did like a free meetup and met, I don't know if he probably did do that, but I just thought like it would make people happy. So I started doing it. And also Chance the Rapper, he used to do it. Taylor Bennett, they used to do it and like sell tickets. So I kind of thought about how they used to do it.
Yeah.
And because you can't just do everything on the internet. Like you got to like show people in real life.
Yeah. And they like it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing all types of like demographics and videos. Mm-hmm. And it seems like people are like reacting good to it.
Yeah. Like a year, 2 years ago, my first meetup that I did had 2 people. And now it's like 3,000 or 4,000 people.
I mean, I feel like that says a lot about you and just like your aura. Like you have this very like fun. Like, are you serious?
Thanks.
Can you be serious? That's your serious face, but still funny. Break it off. Tell me about your concert.
My concert, yeah. December 5th at Reggie's. It's almost sold out. I think there's a few tickets left. It's going to be fun.
And you've been going around to get people to buy these tickets.
Yeah, I got them right now. Let me see.
Yeah. So it's at Reggie's?
At Reggie's.
Yeah.
December 5th.
I love that.
I carry them around. I sell them whenever I see fans. These are the last tickets.
Okay, so you're going to sell them out. 75 tickets? How many of there?
Probably maybe like 30.
Okay, you got it, man. Yeah, I love that. Well, I wish you all the success, and I love watching you on social media. Thank you for hopping on and joining us and chatting with us.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Yeah.
And we're back right after this. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And on a programming note, we're off tomorrow for the holiday, but we'll see you back here on Friday for a special edition of the Weekend Review. As the holiday season begins, we look at the economy, consumer spending, the impact of tariffs on local businesses, and much more. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that gives back to its community in Chicago and beyond.